This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, we saw what Manchester City could do last season in winning the treble, but now they've added winning on penalties to their armoury as well. None of us saw that coming when the Super Cup finished in a draw, but five successful spot kicks is a bit of a game changer. Cue a vital miss from the spot on Saturday against Newcastle. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon podcast. On today's show, we'll be talking through the games against Burnley and Sevilla, looking at how the team are settling into this season and asking the all-important questions like how much did City's current defence cost, and is Xavi Mansisidor the first goalkeeper coach ever to get booked on the touchline? Find out live shortly. Also on today's show, we'll hear from Taylor Payne from Pod on the Tyne. He'll tell us all about Newcastle's new players and their start to the season. And we'll speak to our EDS expert, Sean Blinkhorn, about the young players who were on the pre-season tour and the ones to watch this term as well. I'm David Mooney. Joining me for this week's show are two City fans. We've got Adam Monk.
Hello.
And Macca.
Hello, David.
Welcome back, Perry. First time of the season. Good summer, Adam.
Not too bad. I mean, we've not really had a break, have we? It feels like 2 weeks ago that was in Istanbul, and I think my liver's still recovering. So, yeah, kicking off again. Good to be back.
Good.
But yeah, like I said, the summer's sort of... I mean, July, it just pissed it down, didn't it? So what kind of summer was it?
Yeah.
Not much of one, really.
Macca, you're already on the wine, you've told us this evening, so that'll be good fun. Yeah, good fun.
Yeah,
save it for a special occasion, that's what I say.
Never do that.
Yeah. Well, this season, we're pleased to announce that the Blue Moon podcast is sponsored by Green King Sports, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised City fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter whether you're in Manchester or Milton Keynes, you can catch every single minute of the action. Keep an eye out during the season for events, offers, content and competitions that put you closer to the action. City play Newcastle this weekend in a game that we'll be previewing on the show later on. If you're not getting down to the Etihad for it, then why not watch it in the next best place, a Green King Sports pub. That's to come later on, though. We're going to start with a look back over the Burnley and Sevilla games. Adam, I want to start with you on this one, because Cole Palmer had a very lively performance against Sevilla. Obviously, you've been around the club and you've kind of interacted with the players and stuff.
Yep.
So you've got a bit more of an insight to what he's like as a person as well as a player. What have you made of how he started this season?
Promisingly, but our business isn't finished. And I think that's the whole talking point really right now, isn't it? It's still up in the air, despite the fact he scored two goals. I know for a fact that the club have been very willing to sort of promote him, particularly in the media. We did a massive piece on him when he scored his first Champions League goal. I remember interviewing him on his professional debut, which was at Turf Moor in the League Cup three seasons ago. His first Champions League debut in Marseille. So there's been a lot of publicity for the club to really, I think, just promote the CFA in general, really, in the EDS squad, but also him in particular. And he's been seen as, alongside Foden, as a bit of a beacon of, not hope, but a beacon of light, sort of, really, that the people can shine and come through the academy. And I have to say, the last two performances have probably been the two best performances that he's had in a City shirt. I don't know what's happened to him over the summer. He obviously didn't get much game time last season. But like I said, our business isn't finished, is it? And with Mahrez going, you're looking to replace a fairly sizable amount of output, I think, in terms of goals and assists. So whether Pep thinks Palmer can fill that void, it does remain to be seen.
Yeah. Macca, it's as Adam says there, Mahrez has gone. There have been the suggestions that he might be the player to kind of replace Mahrez's role in the squad. Obviously concerns that he's, you know, a bit inexperienced and it's still very early to be saying that. What do you reckon?
Well, yeah, he is, but he's only 21. I think is he 21? And how old was Mahrez when we got Mahrez? What,
28 maybe.
Exactly. And it's like, well, I think Gaz, friend of the show, Bernie's debut, but he tweeted something the other day and he said it, and it kind of resonated, where he basically said, look, we've done what we've done now, so why can't we just kind of give the likes of Palmer and McAtee a go? They're not going to make it any worse.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got to be honest with Palmer. He's not Rico Lewis, I'll be honest, kind of instantly thought he was, right, this is a player. Palmer didn't do that for me instantly. But, like Adam has just said, the last couple of games, you just think, he's a player here. He's a player, and he's, like I say, he's not going to make us worse. So why not? Why not give him a go?
Yeah, he does. He does kind of like that cutting inside, taking a shot. And I mean, Mahrez like that as well, Maka. So I mean, he's perfect for it, isn't he? Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning as well. Sorry, just quickly, like his output. I think he scored 5 goals for City, and it's not to slander any of the players, but we look at someone like Grealish, who's a consistent fixture in the team. He's only scored about 7 or 8, I think, in 2 years consistently of playing Palmer in very, very limited game time. Already has a decent amount of stats to back up his performances as well. So it's something to, you know, to think about, I think.
Yeah. Prem will definitely soon come because it's the only competition he's not scored in now for City. Adam, do you reckon there needs to be kind of one of the areas that he can improve in is very, very simply, and it comes with experience, just his decision-making? Because it feels sometimes like maybe it's, you think of when the ball goes out to his flank and when he gets on the ball, it maybe takes half a second longer than for other players in that position. And that's something that comes by consistently playing in the team.
True, but then, you know, like Maka said, I looked at Rico Lewis and he's never had that problem. So what is the standard of player required to get into this team? You've got to ask that as well. Like Rico Lewis, I think he was 17 when he made his debut, and he's never, ever had that issue. He's just completely in sync with the rest of the team. I think Foden was exactly the same. So, you know, it depends how high Pep wants to set the standards, I think, and how impatient or patient he wants to be. And that's all it comes down to, really. Yeah, if he plays more, I'm sure he'll pick it up. But My gut feeling, for what it's worth, is that come the end of the transfer window, I don't think he's going to be a...
Yeah.
I just don't.
Yeah. Maka, you mentioned McAtee as well. Obviously, his future is one that we're not sure about either. What do you reckon to him? Where do you see him fitting in for the remainder of the season? Should he stay at City?
I've not seen enough of him. I haven't seen enough of him, to be perfectly honest. And the things that I hear kind of on the grapevine, kind of around here, when I say around here, in like Salford, and I'd said before that I kind of know his dad and people know his dad and everything. That I don't know. I honestly don't know. Again, he's another one. He might not be at City, but yeah. I think that's another one. I think it might be a loan deal.
Yeah.
I would hope we don't sell him because we're not seeing enough of him.
Yeah, it's one of them where you just wonder if City can offer him the minutes that he wants, because obviously the key role he played for Sheffield United last season, he's going to want to play. Let's talk about Erling Haaland, because Adam, it took him 3 minutes to go into top spot for this season's race for the Golden Boot. He's still top at the moment, joint top. He might stay there all season. You know, he could be the first player to go to enter into top spot and stay there all year.
I wouldn't put it past him based off of the sample size that we've had so far. He's a little bit ridiculous. And what I've found quite funny this season, what are we, 3 games in? The Super Cup and the Charity Shield, it's almost like he's took the piss. It's like he doesn't even value them as actual games of football. And you can tell he's playing at 10%, smiling when he gets subbed off, holding up 3 for the trophies we've won. He's just having a bit of a laugh at the moment. And then Premier League, he'll turn it on. The goals were just... against Burnley, we were just like scarily instinctive, weren't they? To attack that space that Rodri headed the ball across in a crowded area and connect with it was superb. And then the second one, I don't really need to elaborate on. Just, I don't think anyone else in the league's pulling that off. So, yeah, he's backfiring, but I didn't expect anything less, to be honest. Especially given the fact that it doesn't really get talked about because of how, well, what happened last season and the trophies he won. But I think he didn't score in the final 7 games of the season, something like that. So he actually did have a little bit of a dip, so you'd expect, you know, for him to kick into gear again, and he has. But he'll have a tougher test this weekend, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely wild, Maka, that run at the end of last season is the worst run of his entire career.
Is that right?
Like, yeah, bloody it's yeah. Mad that. He didn't score in 6 games, and that's the worst run of his career. All right, mate, yeah, he's showing off now. What did you think of the way that City have been playing to him recently? Because at Turf Moor, there was a very... I mean, first off, at half-time, Guardiola was having a little bit of a heated exchange with him about demanding the ball from Bernardo at the wrong times. But then at the same time, they come out for the second half and literally everything was pinged over the top to him.
And it works. And I think last time I was on here, and I just kept saying that we don't use him enough at times. And I know it's not Guardiola's thing to go direct, but he's so good.
I know. Can you imagine getting the best manager in the world and the best striker in the world and going, yeah, you know what? We're going to become a hoof it team. Route one every week.
But at times, sometimes we do. I'm just there just going, just give him the ball. Just give him the ball. I'll just chip it over. Just dink it over. And we don't at times. We don't use him enough at times. But I'm obviously not complaining.
Yeah. Obviously, then for Sevilla, Maka, he was just not in the game. Sevilla was so deep and were not adventuring forward. So obviously, that ball over the in behind can only work for teams that are pressing up the pitch a little bit.
Of course. Yeah.
And Burnley, Haaland himself said after the Burnley game, you know, he was expecting more teams to go man to man and step up. And I don't know if that's a bit more hope than expectation, but it's kind of a difficult role for him in games like Wednesday nights where there's just absolutely no space, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no space. Yeah. If you drop it deep, yeah, like you say. But the thing is with him, which I've always said as well, is he's always doing something. He's always doing a job. He's playing a role. And he's keeping someone occupied, whether it's centre half or whatever. He's doing something, and that's why he's just such a brilliant player.
Yeah. The irony, Adam, was that the one chance he probably got against Sevilla, Cole Palmer comes in behind him and screams for the ball and heads it in himself.
And what a header that was, by the way.
It was a fantastic header to execute.
Yeah, looping ball. I mean, usually with a chance like that, Haaland, he'd whip his leg in the air like he did against Dortmund or in the Charity Shield last year. He does that unorthodox volley.
Yeah, just dislocate my hip and then, you know, off we go.
Yeah, as you do. I don't know. It's weird the way that we use Haaland. I feel like we almost use him as like a starting impact sub. So like he plays the 90 minutes, but for 70 minutes, we'll just instruct him to not do the bare minimum, but just to sort of jog around and move defenders out of position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just sort of like, yeah, make the defenders scared and aware of his presence. And then for 20 minutes, he can exert himself. And that's where the hat trick comes from. That's how it kind of feels. Yeah.
Come on then, Erling, just occupy a space. That's what we want you to do.
Literally.
Yeah. In terms of kind of playing to him, Adam, obviously, as things went at Turf Moor, there's so many times where we know Edison's got the ability to boot the ball the length of the pitch. There's so many times where we get a goal kick and he plays it short. And I'm like, you can't be offside from a goal kick. Get Haaland on the penalty spot at the other end. Edison can hit him. Let's just see what happens.
And the ironic thing as well is that we actually used to do it more before we had Haaland. So I remember when Edison first signed, first couple of seasons, he used to lump it right to the other penalty area to Jesus and Aguero. And I think second season Edison was there. Do you remember Aguero's goal against Huddersfield?
Oh, yes.
Direct from a goal kick. He don't do it anymore. I think he did it once last season, Brighton at home, and lo and behold, Haaland scored because he just obliterated Webster, sent him eating the grass.
Oh, he did.
So, you're right, we do need to do it more. Why we don't, I don't know, but it is frustrating, I guess.
Yeah. Maka, do you think, obviously with going forward for this season, we're still very, very early on into the season. Do you think we're possibly going to see a different way that City try and get the ball to him for this season, just based off the way the Sevilla game went, the way the Burnley game went? Like most of last season, there was kind of a little bit of confusion about whether players should release the ball or whether they shouldn't. And then in the last few months of the season, from about the Forest game, it all seemed to kind of click together. And I'm just wondering, having had that click, if City's players are likely to be better at knowing when to play it, when not to play it?
No, I don't think this is going to be any different to all the other seasons. I just think it'll be like that. We'll have games like last night, Wednesday, where he didn't see the ball, and then we'll have games like Friday where he got the ball when he wanted it. And after a bit, it's just one of those. It's just under Guardiola, that's the way it is. It's just because he just wants everything to perfection all the time. I think it's going to be like, it's going to be a second half where in the change room we go, right, okay, we'll just knock it around and blah, blah, blah. But now, second half, right, give it him. So I don't think anything will change. But that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Let's, I don't know, we're either you're at Turf Moor, I don't know if you watched the game on telly or if you were there.
I would watch it on the telly because I was playing cricket the next day, so I didn't want to risk it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. It's that bottle, that bottle of wine thing again, is it? Well, you will have seen then that Sky Sports put up a graphic during the Burnley game that said City had spent more money on their current defenders than Burnley had spent in their entire history. Now, notwithstanding the issues around undisclosed fees and inflation, all of that, I thought, based on that, we'd play a little game.
It's time for a game of Does This Thing Cost More or Less Than City's Current Defence?
Okay, so we've got six things. I'm going to get you to pick a number each, 1 to 6. Behind each one, there is a thing. Yeah, of course, yeah, yeah. The figure to beat from Sky was £424 million. Okay, so Macca, off you go. Pick a number, 1 to 6.
6.
Number 6, okay. I want to know whether Cave K Exuma, the most expensive private island in the Bahamas, it's 220 acres, it has its own private deep water harbour and a landing strip as well for any aircraft. It's completely self-sufficient with all utilities underground, water, sewage, power, all that sort of stuff. Is that more or less than City's current defence of £424 million?
Okay, is it more?
No, it's less. It's a mere 47.3 million you can have that
really?
For.
That's a bargain.
Absolute bargain.
It's less than Kyle Walker.
Yeah. So swing and a miss from Macca. Adam, over to you.
What number did you say, Macca?
You had number 6.
I said 6.
Yeah, number 6. Right, I'll go with number 4. Go on.
Number 4. Okay, St. Edward's Crown. The crown used to coronate the new monarchs on the British throne. It's 22 carat gold, was made in 1661 for the coronation of Charles II. It features more than 400 gemstones, including 6 sapphires and 12 rubies, more or less than City's current defence.
If this is more than that, is preposterous. I'm going less.
It is less. It's only 45 million, less than the island.
Yes, again, a bargain.
Yeah, absolute bargain. So 1-0 to Adam. Macca, over to you.
For what?
Pick a number. One. To,
oh, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
3.
Number 3. Okay, the cost of the Hubble Space Telescope mission. It was launched in 1990, but it had been in development since 1977. It has the technology to see 13.4 billion light years away. Is that more or less than City's current defence?
What year was that? Because I have to...
launched in
he's applying inflation.
Yeah, launched in 1990, but in development since 1977.
Probably less than.
It's actually more. It's a whopping 12.6 billion.
Come on, can pull away here.
Yeah. So, another swing and a miss. Adam, over to you.
Number one.
Okay. The total of all the high offers made to contestants on the UK version of The Chase. There have been 2016 episodes broadcast. So that means there's been 8,064 individual players and therefore 8,064 high offers. Is that more or less than City's current defence?
Oh, my God. I can't, oh, my God, I got to be in maths. 8,000. Oh, I'm going less.
It is less.
Yeah,
300.6 million was the total outlay there. That was 124 million less than the City's current defence.
Yeah. Yeah. 2.
There we go. Macca, number 2. Okay. This one is Dolly Parton's net worth. She sold more than 100 million albums, and her most famous hits are 9 to 5, and she also had a hit with I Will Always Love You. Obviously, not most famously sung by her, but that is one of hers.
More.
That is more, £511 million. So there you go. So, Adam, that leaves you with my favourite one of the lot. 1 billion Freddos bought at the price charged by Tesco at Portwood in Stockport. Each one of them is 18 grams per chocolate of chocolate per bar. When they were relaunched in 1990, they were priced at 10p, but not anymore.
Billion Freddos?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more.
It's not. It's no. Less. Yeah, yeah. They're only 25p each, so that means that they are a mere £250 million for 1 billion Freddos.
God, that would have been better value than Grealish, probably.
I mean, I'm not one to talk about value of chocolate. I absolutely love the stuff. But there we go. I've lost count of the score, but I don't care. Just wanted to have a bit of fun.
A draw.
So let's call it a draw. No, yeah. I think Adam won, but
I'm taking that and running.
Yeah.
Are we doing that every time this season with every team?
We should actually, shouldn't
or
we?
A midfield and attack. We should make it a thing.
We should do
that. I like that.
I've gone all giddy now.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's get back to some sensible stuff. Adam, Kevin De Bruyne's injury, we've heard this week, looks like it's going to be a lot more serious than previously thought. City are probably going to be out him for a couple of months. What do you make of the entire situation?
Let's look at the positive, shall we? We've won the league in his absence before. That's positive one. 18-19, I think he played like 4 games in the league, something like that. So we can do it. It's just that we have a thinner squad this time. However, there is going to be people coming through the door. So I was thinking about this the other day. I think the only injury that will seriously set us back in respect to our competition this year is probably Rodri, just because I don't think the club trusts Phillips, given that
he's not played in the Community Shield or the Super Cup. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Rodri's the only, and my worry is that Rodri actually will get injured because of Phillips, because he has to play every game. So that's my only concern. But I think Pep always has a workaround. You know, I think the blessing in disguise last season, everyone was flapping when Cancelo left because of how big an asset he was to us. And Pep found a workaround and we suddenly became better. So there's actually been an argument at times, not one that I subscribe to, but that we actually are a better team in some respects when De Bruyne is out and Bernardo plays through the middle, particularly when it used to be David Silva and Bernardo as like the number 8. So although he is our best player, I don't think it's the end of the world because we've got other people coming in and we've got the best manager in the world. So let's stay calm is my take.
You happy clapper. All right. The thing is, Macca, it's very easy to be wise after the event and say that he shouldn't have played in pre-season or he shouldn't have started the game against Burnley or whatever after going off in the Champions League final. But at the same time, he knows his body, and if he didn't feel ready, he'd have said so, surely.
Yeah, you would have thought so. And I don't disagree with anything that Adam just said there, because I was thinking about it before. I mean, like you said, the one is Rodri. I mean, we've been very, very, very lucky that Rodri's not missed any games, really, has he? And he's been, I mean, he's so good and he's not got injured. And if he does get injured, yeah, all right, we're struggling a little bit. But the other thing is, well, Foden can step in for De Bruyne in the middle. Silva can step in.
Does that get a little bit fraught though if they're already at breaking point for having to play elsewhere if the squad is so small?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think my only issue is if Rodri doesn't play, because then we're talking about Phillips. So, I mean, I think
the good thing with Foden is he wants to play in the middle anyway.
Yeah.
So it might open that up for him. That's one way of looking at it.
But the other thing is as well with Phillips, is he that bad? Really?
We don't know.
We don't know, that's the thing.
But that's the thing. He's been very, very good for England. He had a very poor game when he came on for us against Leicester. But other than that, I don't think he's a bad footballer. But I think people just written him off. But obviously, Pep sees him day in, day out, and doesn't seem to trust him.
Yeah.
So, well,
he's
more
for
about
that,
football
than
me. Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. And I want the lad to be good because he's a good lad. And obviously, like I say, watched him playing for England. He's never let England down. So, but there you go.
Yeah. I want to go back a bit further in the field and talk about Ederson as well, Macca, because I think he deserves a little bit of focus on him after this week, because against Burnley, he was playing as a centre-back at times where he was just stepping into the back three or four or whatever, whoever was playing in that back line, and then just holding onto the ball until Burnley came and pressed it. And as much as his patience tempts them out and then offers different passes around and the ball over the top for Haaland, I don't know about you, but my heart goes into my mouth sometimes.
He's been brilliant now since the back end of last season. And well, first, I know we're only a couple of games in, but he's been absolutely brilliant. Because my biggest complaint about him, was he wasn't making saves, and he's now making saves, yeah. And he's been pretty much faultless for back in the last season. Was brilliant in the Champions League final. Was brilliant in the games leading up to that as well. And then he started off the season the same way. So no, I'm very, very happy with him now. Very.
Yeah. Adam, that one just after Cole Palmer had scored against Sevilla. I mean, first off, like the old cliche of you're never more vulnerable than when you've just scored came into play, because suddenly Sevilla were through and clean through one on one with him, and he just stands up well, makes the block, and then and pounces on the ball, and like that feels like the sort of save that even 6 months ago he probably wouldn't make.
Yeah, I always used to say, and I mean, I've not rated David De Gea for maybe
a decade.
But what I did always used to say that De Gea did that Ederson never did was use his feet to save. And what he seems to have done in the last, like, you know, like Max said, tail end of last season, maybe the turn of the year. If you actually pay attention on one-on-ones now, he makes his body from like his waist down a lot bigger, uses his legs. And it, you know, it closes the angle so much more when you're going one-on-one. There were so many shots that used to go past him where he just makes himself seem too diminutive, or his positioning's a bit off. But he's really ironed that out. And then in terms of his general play on the ball, I've just been desensitized to that for years. I think since we played Liverpool 2 years ago and Jota closed him down at Etihad, I think it was some adrenaline-induced shock that just kicked in. Like, I've never quite recovered from that now, to the point where I don't feel anything. So, yeah, he's probably, I think this year has probably been the best that he's played in since the Centurions, maybe. I'd go as far as saying that. And also, you know, you look at how long a keeper can go on for. How old's he? 31 something? I don't even know. He might be younger than that, maybe. But I think he's got many years left as our number one.
Yeah. The weird story, though, this week, Macca, with Stefan Ortega being linked to Bayern Munich, and then the latest on that is that it looks like it's probably not going to happen. But I'm just wondering how much of Ortega has been a driving factor in Ederson's form, because Ortega, when he's come in, I mean, again, we've not seen a huge amount of him, but when he's come in, he's looked a step above the second keepers that City have had previously.
He's been absolutely brilliant. He's been absolutely brilliant, and he's never let us down. Oh, well, what was it? Was it the Southampton?
Southampton away, yeah. He was just off his line.
He had a bad game that day, but other than that, it's been absolutely amazing. Yeah, and like you say, maybe that's like pushed him on a daily basis in training, and in maybe thinking, well, oh, bloody hell, I need to kind of up my game here.
But, yeah, there's a number two who might actually be a number one, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. He'd walk into any side, wouldn't he? Really? You would have thought.
Yeah, would be nice.
Walk into United.
Yeah, but so would I, let's be honest.
And me.
Have you been on the pitch, Macca? Can you reach the crossbar?
Oh,
sorry.
Him and Lisandro at the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm solving it.
It would be nice, though, Adam, wouldn't it, if every now and then Ederson saved a penalty. It's 43 he's faced now for City, including shootouts. He's saved five of them, which feels a little bit low as a percentage.
I couldn't name you one, genuinely. Has he saved a penalty at City?
He has. Most of them sit. Well, no, it's a penalty. It's not open play, of course.
I meant like in the 90 minutes.
he saved from Dries Mertens against Napoli in 2017, and Luka Milivojević for Palace.
Same season.
Yeah. And then later in that season as well, from Aubameyang at the Emirates. in, it was the 3-0 in the snow at the Emirates after the League Cup final when none of the Arsenal fans turned up. Yeah. And City scored the great, City would have scored the greatest, most, like, most beautiful goal ever had Leroy Sané not scuffed the finish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I say that all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely ruined it. He then saved in the penalty shootout against Chelsea in the League Cup final from the 0-0. In the 0-0, that was from Jorginho. And then he saved on the behind closed doors final game when we said goodbye to Aguero. He saved one of the Everton had a penalty that day and he saved that as well. So those are the five.
That's not a great record, is it? When, and considering the fact I could probably name about 10 that Hart saved, you know, it's not like, and he's been here probably the same amount of time as our number one now. So yeah, it's not ideal, but how often, the thing is, we've got such a good back line. We don't really give away penalties very often. And we also rarely find ourselves in penalty shootouts. So like, I've always felt that the problem with City and penalties is more to do with the taking of them than the saving of them.
Well, they scored five. Always... scored five on Wednesday. Yeah.
I know. Look, the other day was an anomaly. I'm just talking generally, you know. I've always felt that the taking's been the worst part. But yeah, it would be nice for him to just, you know, he's bucked up in terms of saving one-on-ones. He can now focus on that maybe. Maybe bring Caballero back to teach him.
As a goalkeeper, Moons, what would you... probably look on some technicalities.
There. There's one penalty, and one of the Sevilla players did it on Wednesday night, and there's one penalty that I always think I can save. And that is, you know, when a player starts with a straight run-up, but then before they start the run-up, they step to one side.
Yeah.
They like 90% of the time, I'm almost like, I would always go to the opposite corner from the side that they've gone to, that they've stepped to. So if they're a right footer and they step to the left to open the body up, they're probably going to go to their right and the stroke keeper's left. Right. Yeah. Because that just seems to be the easiest finish. And then there's a couple of Sevilla players did it. And I'm just like, just go that way. That seems to be the easiest way to finish when you've done that run up. It might be complete bollocks. I don't know.
What I find interesting is like, I can't remember what game it was last season. And it was Everton Leicester at the King Power, but like Pickford had like Madison's penalty where he goes with his penalties on his water bottle. I've never seen that at City. You know, like research done and physically given to a keeper for a shootout on like where players go on where the roughish penalty is kicked. I don't know if we, I'm sure we do, but,
I wonder if we only do it for important shootouts rather than like the League Cup, the Super Cup and the Community Shield. I don't know. Yeah. Are we joking about the penalties, Macca? But in all seriousness, it does feel like maybe City have turned a little bit of a corner with those penalties on Wednesday night. I mean, there was a couple of crackers in there.
I know, but we don't know, do we? It could be the next one. You just don't know. I mean, we were lucky with it. We're Kyle Walkers, weren't we? I mean, that was very lucky. In another day, that saved, and we probably lose. So yeah, I'm not going to say that we turned the card on that. To be honest,
I just wanted Edison to take one because Guardiola said a couple of years ago that he was the best taker.
Twat it,
yeah, and yeah, exactly. Guardiola said he was the best taker at the club, and then we've never seen it. And like in open play, I get it because if he misses, he's got to run the length of the pitch back, and there's an open goal. Yeah. But in a shootout, nothing riding on it. Go for it. You know,
one of the best penalty takers I've ever seen in my life with Julian Dix at West Ham, and all he did is just twatted it.
Yeah.
So, like you say, he doesn't have to run up to the other end. Just put your foot through it, and that's it.
Yeah. Promise you, one of the best goalkeeper penalties I've seen.
Joe Hart.
No, Nicky Weaver. look for Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday against Chesterfield in whatever the competition is in the lower leagues. And he didn't realise that he was due to take one because everyone else would. He was just like trying to make the save, moving off to the side, trying to make the save, move off to the side, and then nobody stepped forward, and all the lads were like, "Weaves, it's you! It's you!" And he was like, "Oh God, what do I do?" And he decided to just take a goal kick, but keep his head down, and hopefully it would stay low. And honestly, like, if the net wasn't there, he'd have killed somebody in the cop. It just, like, he hit it that hard. It was incredible. Go and have a look on YouTube. It's brilliant. Right, well, it's time to talk now about the Newcastle game. Let's begin by getting a view from St James's Park. I've been speaking to Taylor Payne from the Pod on the Tyne to find out about how their squad is shaping up for this season and their hopes for the new term.
I think everybody was saying this in the pub beforehand as well. We went for a quick drink before the game and everyone was saying, could be cagey today, could be a close one. You know, they're a really good team. You know, it depends who's had a better pre-season, where the fitness levels are at, who's got more players missing, all that kind of stuff, you know. And I don't think anybody saw that coming. We're so quick out of the traps in games these days. I think it's something that Eddie must have drilled into them of, you know, we start fast and we go like the clappers until, you know, we need a break and then we'll sit off for a little bit. And they do it all the time, mainly at home. I mean, when we play at home, it might be different when we play City, but it was astonishing. It was great. Great to watch. Lovely to see Tonali playing the way he did as well, which was the other topic of conversation in the pub beforehand, was how long is it going to take him to adjust to English football? And the answer was 6 minutes. That was
good. Yeah. Well, what was so good about it? Why did it work so well? I mean, when you look at last season, obviously you improved a lot last season on the year before, and you know there's the potential to improve again this year. How's that improvement going? What made it so good at the weekend?
I think the big thing I took away from when Villa beat us towards the end of last season was we were basically bullied at Villa Park, and they were more physical than us. They were more intense than us, and I just don't think we allowed them to get anywhere near the ball. And on Saturday, it was, you know, all of our physically sort of dominant players, people like Joe Linton and Dan Byrne, were just getting stuck in, and they were doing what they needed to do. And I know it's a bit of a sort of hackneyed old cliche of get stuck in from the first whistle, but that's kind of what it was. You know, we pressed them hard, and I mean, unfortunately, Tyrone Mings got that horrible injury and had to go off. And after that, Villa just didn't look like the same team. They pretty much folded straight away after that.
Yeah, you've mentioned Tonali there already. Let's have a quick look at the summer signings, because I mean, let's start with him, because he seems like a bit of a character anyway. He's had the tour of Newcastle, hasn't he? Did he book a table in Wetherspoons? Did I say
somebody spotted a reserved sign on a Wetherspoons table and it had reserved for Tonali, and obviously someone thought it was a piss take, and then about 40 minutes later he showed up.
I love stuff like that.
I want to know what he had. Do you think he went for gammon and pineapple and a shot of Messerschmitt or something like that? I don't know, but fantastic. Hey, yeah. Fair play to the lad. Get stuck in, man.
What was he like? So off the pitch, we know he's a bit of a card. What was he like on it?
He just looked like he had an advanced script of the game, you know. He always had space. He always wanted the ball. He always did something good with it when he got it. He plays simple passes well, but he does it in a way that it takes the pressure off the rest of the players around him, you know. A couple of little times he was interacting with the fullbacks and dropping little balls in and just stepping off a few yards away from whoever was around him and giving himself that space and that time, you know. And you know, we all say about the best players, it always looks like they've got hours on the ball when in fact they haven't. And that was exactly the case with him on Saturday. He looked like he'd been doing it for years. You know, it didn't look, you would, if you were to look at every single player on that game and you didn't know who was playing in the Premier League for the first time, I don't think you could have picked him out.
Yeah. Just looking at some of the other players that you brought in, I think Harvey Barnes is a good catcher.
Great signing.
Yeah. What do you make of how he'll fit in?
I mean, again, I think he looks like he's played for us for the last two or so years, but I think that's, you know, he's obviously been sort of taught how to play a certain way at Leicester, and he loves cutting in onto that right foot and 1-2s and stuff like that. And Eddie'll, I hope, you know, Eddie does some great work with him. But there's already a great player there. It looks like his sort of finishing instinct, his goal scorer's instinct was what has impressed me the most. Two finishes in the Salah Cup. In a friendly game where he didn't even look at the goal, he just hit it and it was in. And the same on Saturday against Villa, he got that chance and I never for a second thought he was going to miss. Whereas in the past, if that chance had fallen to, say, Alan St-Maximin, anything could have happened. And I mean literally anything, you know. So I think he might just be a little bit more consistent and a little bit more the kind of player that Eddie Howe wants to play in that position.
Yeah. Now, a couple of other players came in, Livramento and Minte. Am I saying that right? I don't know. I don't know much about him.
Not an awful lot about him either, to be honest. I know he's gone straight back on loan, hasn't he? He's gone to, is it Feyenoord he's gone to or somewhere? I can't exactly remember, David, to be honest.
Yeah, I've just seen on your Wikipedia page, it is Feyenoord, yeah.
It is. Oh, well, there you go. That name was there somewhere in the back of my head. Livramento is an interesting one. He's been injured for most of last season, but he was hailed as one of the most promising young fullbacks in the country for a while, and he had a great season at Southampton when he broke out. His stock rose dramatically and then obviously had that horrible injury. But he's come back. He looks strong. Again, he's the type of player that Eddie can mould however he wants him to play, you know, and he's good at going forward. And he'll learn an awful lot from Kieran Trippier as well, who's just the model pro, you know. He's arguably the most important signing we've made since the takeover. Yeah. And Livramento playing as a deputy to him, I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, and I was going to say, when you look at the squad as a whole, it feels very much like, and I hate making the comparisons because of the takeover, but it feels like very much early stage City back in the kind of late 2009, 10, 11 sort of that era.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, when you look at the aims and objectives for this season, what are you hoping to see?
It's going to be really difficult to match what we did last year, and I think last year was a massive bonus, getting to a cup final, getting in the Champions League. I think the majority of us said last year top 10 would be reasonable, you know, would be reasonable to expect that. But this season, my God, I don't know. I mean, I would expect us to drop a couple of places in the league, maybe anything from seventh up, I would be more than happy with. If we had a good run in the cups, and if we could make it out the group stages and the knockouts in the Champions League, I mean, my God, that would be brilliant.
You must be excited about Champions League football back as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think we're particularly well fancied, but it might be that, you know, some of these lads really step their game up and go for it. And we have got a lot of players who've played in the Champions League before there. Kieran Trippier, Tenali, Alexander Isak. You know, a lot of these players have already played in the Champions League, so they know what it's all about. It'll be interesting to see how they manage the fixture congestion and all that with what I don't think yet is a perfect squad. We're not far away from having really good depth in nearly every position, but I think we're still probably a right-sided centre-back and a left-back away from thinking, well, actually, we've got a good second 11 there as well as a good first 11, you know.
Yeah. Now let's take a look at the game at weekend, because the Etihad has not exactly been a happy hunting ground for you down the years. what do you see for this one? Because obviously, you know, City are still in their early season, sort of, you know, getting themselves up to speed. They're in that phase of not quite at tip top level. They've got a couple of injuries as well. You guys seem to have come out of the traps absolutely flying. So what do you expect for the weekend?
To be honest, I don't really sort of subscribe to this sort of thing, but if there is a good time to play City, it's early in the season. If I had to choose a point of when to play City, it would be early in the season. We played you early in the season last year, and it was probably one of the best games of football that St James' Park's ever seen, to be honest.
Caused us no end of problems, yeah.
Yeah, it was great, you know. And Sir Maximan was turning John Stones inside out, and Joe Linton was bullying in the midfield and harrying, and Bruno looked sharp, and it was, and Callum Wilson as well in front of goal looked great. I don't know, but that was at St James' Park, and this isn't. So I never expect us to get anything when we go to City, and especially because you've got the fucking Predator playing up front for you. You know, like, what? It's just ridiculous, isn't he? So, yeah, I don't know. I think I would be happy with a draw. I'd be happy if we came away with a draw, but I can't ever see us getting anything at City. Never see us getting any points, really.
Yeah, if that were to happen and you were to actually take anything from the game, what would the thing that does it for you? Where are you strongest at the moment, do you think?
I think the intensity, the pressing. The problem with City is if you press them in the wrong way, they just play through you. They just play through you, and they're that good at it. You know, Guardiola knows exactly what he's doing where that's concerned. they will just play through you and make you look silly. So you have to do it in the right way. I don't think it'll be anywhere near as intense as it was against Villa on Saturday. I think he might go early and have a little sniff and see what it feels like, Eddie, and say, maybe there is a chance here. But I think we'll probably sit off a little bit and it won't be anywhere near as intense. If we are going to score, that man Alexander Isak is our prime threat at the moment. And Anthony Gordon's playing well, Miggy Almiron on the wings. You know, if they can get the ball into the box to Isak, I think he could finish any chance that comes his way on his day. So, yeah, I think if the goals are going to come, that's where they'll come from.
Yeah, well, we got the charity bet coming up a bit later on, Tyler. So let's have your score prediction. We'll put it on that. What are you going for?
Let's go for the same as last year. What was it? Oh, it was 3-3, wasn't it, last year? Let's not be that mad. Let's go 2-2. Twos each.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, and we're very sorry about that.
That was Taylor Payne speaking to me. Macca, I sense this one might be a bit of a tricky one, you know.
Well, it will be. I mean, they were very, very, very good last week, and they're just a good side. So yeah, it will be hopefully a good game. There's rarely any games with Newcastle that are poor, to be honest, in history, isn't it? So looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I just think it's going to be a slog, this one. I cannot see it going any other way. We'll come to the predictions later, which I've gone for a positive one in the end. But yeah, you have to, don't you? But for me, maybe bar us, I think they are the best defensive side in the league, the way Howell sets them up. And now they've also bolstered it with an improved attack. And midfield with Tonali as well, who's very, very capable. So I think, I just said that we'll be fine in De Bruyne's absence, but I think we're really going to miss him in a game like this, where we need, against a deep block, we need someone to unlock, you know, even just like one of those balls in and a Haaland head or something like that. It's going to be harder to come by, and we don't have the reinforcements in over the line ready to play yet. So I think it could be a tricky one, and one where I think a goal early on will really, really do us good, because I think the longer it goes on, the more you're going to be looking at like either them hitting us on the break. I think Isak for Newcastle's the most underrated attacker in the league. He's so, so good. Harvey Barnes I've always rated. Wilson's a good striker. So on the break, they're going to be a real threat. So yeah, I'm actually a little bit, and City always, early on in the season, they always have like a draw at home or something like that, like a drop points game at home. I think it was Brentford last year. I remember Everton in the Centurion season. So not to be doom and gloom, but my head thinks this is going to be tricky.
Yeah, it's interesting you thought that, though, because like my gut instinct, and it's just purely from looking at Newcastle from the outside, is like you were talking about Eddie Howe being well-drilled and Newcastle being able to kind of sit in deep and frustrate. I got the sense that they might be a team that could be baited up the pitch in the same way that Burnley were. Do you not fancy that?
Possibly, but I think, you know, with Burnley, you've got to consider the fact that it's a new team that companies assembled. They were newly promoted. Howe has had 18 months with them now and got them in the top four. They're a lot more disciplined than Burnley will be at this point in their development. And they do have a better squad than Burnley. So possibly, but I, giving my honest answer, I don't think they'll be that naive.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, Macca, that it was the game after we got dumped out of the Champions League by Real Madrid in that horrid, horrid last minute double goal thing. We played Newcastle at the Etihad, and Eddie Howe used it as an opportunity to see where his Newcastle team were, and he just tried to play City at their own game, and City took him apart. And the year after, it was a 2-0 win, but it was a really, really tricky and frustrating game that Newcastle played. And I just wonder like where the balance might be for Eddie Howe at the moment, because again, it's early in the season. He could look at this as a little bit of a free hit and go, let's see where we're at. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. And what Adam said is completely right. And I don't think they're far away from really, really challenging. I don't know Adam thinks, but I just think they're a really, really good side. They've got a great squad. They've bought well, and they're, yeah, I can honestly see them winning the Premier League in 5 years' time.
Yeah,
if not before.
The world-class talent away from winning it, I think.
Yeah.
That's what they need now. They need that dynamite. The X-Factor players is what they need now. And then, yeah,
when,
they're going to be
when City
right
signed Aguero, yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Maka, who do you think slots into De Bruyne's place for this one? Because as we talked about earlier, fans have been crying out for Foden centrally. Alvarez has been Guardiola's pick there recently. Maybe not as many options on the wing if Foden does move inside. I don't know. How do you see it kind of all fitting in at the moment?
I'd always say Foden. I'd always say Foden and then work around that.
Yeah.
I think he's been underused in the middle. He's such a good footballer, and as we all know. But yeah, just put him in there. He's not out of place. I mean, it's not like we've not got lads who can play out wide. So yeah.
Yeah, if it was my... what do I think he's got? I actually think he's going to go with... because Bernardo got a full rest, so Bernardo's definitely starting. I think he's giving him a full rest because he's going to play in the middle. That's just my gut feeling. I think he's probably going to go... he's going to try and stretch the pitch and put Grealish and Foden right and left, I think,
yeah.
And just try and stretch them out as much as possible to give Haaland a bit of leeway. And then Bernardo, because, you know, their midfield now, is it Tonali? Joe Linton can just run his socks off every game. He doesn't stop, and he's like 6'4" and massive. So you might just need a bit, like, it's going to be Rodri, Kovacic and Bernardo, I think.
Yeah. Need that steel in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah, and then just go from there. But I do think it's going to be difficult. We'll see.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Adam, you mentioned Bernardo, obviously. Appears to have agreed a contract this week.
Yes.
Nothing signed. Hopefully that comes soon. It's an interesting conclusion to a situation where a player has wanted to leave for so long that he's actually got a contract extension.
Well, yeah, I've said it for so long. He's wanted to leave so long, but this is how it goes. He goes every summer, end of the season, he goes, Pep, I'd like to leave. And then Pep goes, all right, mate, 120 million, and I'll let you go. And then no one pays it. And then he goes, all right, boss, one more year of slave labour. Come on, City. And then that's basically it. But I think now what he's got to contend with is he's got married. He's got a kid on the way. And he's probably thinking now, how many years at the top have I got left? 3 or 4? Is it really worth uprooting my entire life because I don't like overcast weather? Like, that's probably what he's thought about. So, you know, I just feel like now he's going to be a player who ends up having a testimonial at the club and we'll all be singing his praises for years to come. And that's the way it's been. And also, like, furthermore, when I was at the club, there was murmurings in the second year anyway that he was open in my last year, so 21-22, that he was open to sign a contract back then, but he was just sort of assessing his options. So I think it's not like he's ever kicked up a fuss and gone, like, you know, Sane did, for instance, where it's like, I want to leave the club. It's always been like, he's had his options open and, you know, it's kind of like he's just left university and he's just exploring what it is he wants to do. Like, that's kind of what it's like for him. So
is it just that he wants a son on his back? Is that
yeah, from, well, I used to go out with one of his ex-girlfriends, so I knew him quite well.
Right,
so.
All right.
I did. So,
it's not coming out here, is it?
So I heard like a few things behind like closed doors of why he sees Manchester as like what we'd see like living in Russia. That's kind of how he sees it. Where it's just like there is just zero sun. He gets 1 month a year of enjoyment and dopamine, and then the rest is just depressing for him. That's kind of how he sees it.
Are we not rich enough to build him his own microclimate?
Just like a greenhouse that he just sits in.
Yeah. Wait, the academy,
Maka, for him, I guess there is the other side of it is that, you know, if it's been a case of, you know, go and bring us this offer and go and bring us this offer every summer and nobody's paid it, there is also the element of, one, he's now got, if he signs, assuming he signs this deal, he's got security that, you know, he knows where he's playing his football. He's not going to end up in a situation of being out of contract and no club wanting him or no club being able to afford his wages or anything like that. And at the same time, if it probably puts into writing, there's probably a release clause in there that puts into writing just how much a club needs to pay.
Well, yeah, but also just, I mean, how good is he? I mean, I know it's a cliche and saying, oh, this will be the best sign of the summer, whatever, but he's just so good. He's just so good, isn't he? And just...
And the summer that we've lost Gundogan and Mahrez as well, you don't also want to lose Bernardo in that.
No, just keep him Walker and him. Honestly, I'm happy.
Yeah, I think he's the only player... he's the only player like that I think Pep thinks is truly irreplaceable. Like the other ones, I think he sees, even De Bruyne, I think he'd always see a workaround for it. But Bernardo, I think in the back of his head, he'd think, shit, there really is no one else like this guy. You know, yeah, it's one of them.
I totally agree.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember that. Remember that Liverpool game in 18-19 in the January? De Bruyne was injured and Bernardo played in that one. And like the amount of running he did in that first hour, I'm almost certain Guardiola said to him, listen, give us an hour of that and then, you know, we'll take you off and Kevin will come on and everything will be fine. And then he gets to the hour mark and Guardiola's on the touchline going, look, 10 more minutes, just 10 more minutes of that. And then we get to 17, he's like, 5 minutes, just 5 minutes more, Bernardo. And then he kind of like gets stretchered off at the end on oxygen because he's on
He can do. He can literally do everything.
Yeah.
Can't he?
Yeah.
He can play in any position in front of the back four. He just works his bollocks off. He's the ideal kind of fans player, isn't he? He's just amazing.
Yeah. I hear as well that actually in all of this he's developed quite a taste for long sight. He's quite happy around long sight. So that could have been the decisive factor in the end. Yeah. Maka, let's turn our attention to the back end of the pitch because as good as City have been, as good as City were against Burnley and less to a lesser extent against Sevilla. There were rocky spells at times in both of those games. I'm wondering now that we don't know about Stones. He could be injured with his hamstring. But Diaz should be available again after concussion. Does he come straight back in for you?
Well, if it's available, yeah. But it just in terms of our back four. Let's talk about back four. Laporte. What's the latest with Laporte?
He's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got to be going surely.
Well, yeah, but I can't believe he's going to Saudi Arabia.
It's a shame that no one wants him if he's deserving 29. Of. Because, yeah, I'm looking at him. Like, he's always had a bit of a mistake in him, but he's one of the best centre-halves we've ever had, and he's not really dropped off. It don't make much sense to me how we can't command at least 30 mil for him how someone wouldn't pay that. Considering West Ham, right, have just bid 30 million for Maguire, allegedly. And we've got this bloke sitting there and we're accepting 16 for him, if that's, you know, said to be true. Don't make any sense to me.
Is it that we would not sell to anyone in the Premier League?
Surely not. I mean, we sold Jesus and Zinchenko to a team that would turn out to be the closest challengers last season.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm worried. Well, not worried, but that's why I'm thinking, well, we're not going to sell to anyone else. But... Laporte is, he could walk into any side. He's quality.
Yeah. Right, well, let's get some predictions on the board for this one. No wins on the charity bet from the last show, so we remain on £65 for the season so far. William Hill is giving us 3 correct score singles. We're giving the winnings to the Man City Fans Food Bank support group. They'll be back outside the Etihad on Saturday evening, giving up their time ahead of the Newcastle game to collect donations for Manchester Central Food Bank. They'll be under the bridge opposite Asda between 5:30 and 7:30 PM, so go and see them with a donation if you can. We've already heard from Taylor that he's gone for a 2-2 draw. That's 14-1 and £140 if he's right. Adam, what are you having for this one?
2-1 Blues.
2-1 City is 15-2 and £75 if you're right. Maka?
3-1 City.
Tricky game, but you're going for 3-1 nonetheless. It's, to be fair, 3-1 is the score that wins most often on the charity bet, so it's always good to have it covered. 12-1 if you're right, £120 there. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and please gamble responsibly. To find out more about responsible gambling, then take a look at begambleaware.org. Now then, last year, Rico Lewis was one of the standout performers, to the point where it feels perfectly normal now for him to be named in the starting lineup for the opening game of the season. I've been speaking to our EDS expert, Sean Blinkhorn, about the young players on the Asia tour this year and where their futures may lie, starting with more reaction to how Lewis is getting on.
So I have been thinking about when I came on last year. No, that's a lie. I was reading my notes from when I came on last year. I could never remember it otherwise. And we spoke about Rico Lewis then, and it wasn't the first time. I think he was like what you'd say, the winner of pre-season, so to speak. I think he was performing quite well, if I remember rightly, last summer. Obviously, then you go into the new season thinking, oh, could he get a chance? And usually the answer is no, he couldn't get a chance. But this time was very, very different. 23 appearances, senior appearances for Rico, with his one goal in the Champions League. And obviously, he's played his part and won the three major trophies. Even to the point where Guardiola's waxing lyrical at one point, he's saying like, oh, we couldn't have played, you know, the season wouldn't have gone how it did without Rico Lewis or something, he said, didn't he?
Well, it was about the system, wasn't it? It was about the idea. The
we can't play this way without him. We couldn't have adapted to this without him. And this is a second-year scholar, you know, 17 going on 18, who, this is unprecedented, really. You know, I'm very happy to have spotted him here early and brought him to your audience, but I think it's possibly time to say that he's a senior player, and move on, because he should be, you know, 23 appearances, he should be getting 30 odd this year. He's that good. It's time to move on for Rico. He's a senior player even in his young years now.
It's this idea as well with him that, like, going into the season, nobody's really that worried. There was worries, obviously, if Kyle Walker had left, but nobody was really that worried with the right fullback options you've got. If you've got Walker and Lewis as your two options, when you want to play a fullback and not a centre half like Stones.
Agreed, but you know, is he even going to play there? I tweeted, or X'd or whatever it is now, about halfway through the season, that I don't even think you've seen a percentage of his range. I think he's still got so much more to show, which is scary, really, because he was running games at times. Starting games, like when he started the Bournemouth away game, and obviously various other really important games, but that really sticks in my mind for whatever reason. It must have been the time period and what was the pressures of the time. It's incredible, really, and I'm just so glad that for once I've spotted a player at 16 that I thought was really good, and it turns out
He's really good.
I hope he goes on to play a lot more.
Well, let's look ahead to some of the players coming through at the moment who could be the next Rico Lewis's for you to pick out. So who are the scholars that we should be keeping an eye on for this for this coming season?
Well, I'm going to have a look at this year's scholars in a few weeks. In the weeks to come, when they start to play, I will... There's a lot of interesting players there. If you remember, His name escapes me, but the lad who was, we broke the transfer record for a 13-year-old. We paid 400 grand for a 13-year-old. It's that lad's scholarship year this year.
Okay.
So I'm going to hang on and watch the players a few times first. I'm very happy to report that Darren Fletcher's kids have left for United, because I was dreading having to...
Big level, yeah.
God, can you imagine? So they've gone, so that's good. But other than that, I think we'll concentrate on them more this year, because that's what worked with Rico when he was in his scholarship year. So I'll really zero in on the scholars this year.
Yeah. Let's look at some of the players then that did go on the pre-season tour. I mean, let's start with Oscar Bob, who got a fair few minutes in the three tour games. What did you make of him?
He looks good, doesn't he? Which is great. I would be very wary of a player who is 20 going on 21 this year, as I'd say in his fifth year since joining as a scholar at 16, who has only played age group football at the moment. I mean, stranger things have happened, but that doesn't sound like a player who's going to jump straight into senior football and hit the ground running. One thing I will say is he came as a winger, kind of a floaty winger, and he's adapted really well to playing centrally, which is a bit of a theme for the academy. Micah Hamilton, who I've spoke about before, he did something similar. And then Matty Whittingham, who's even younger, he's done like a similar thing. He's moved into a central midfield role and used that kind of wingery exuberance in a central role, you know, a bit of vision, bit of passing, that type of thing. I think, and I thought for a while that Oscar's looked good and he's looked really good, but it's been mostly in under 21s, under 23s, and friendlies. I'm wary that he's not had a loan yet. He's not had any real minutes yet. I wouldn't be confident going into, because obviously you went to we're talking about the players that went on pre-season here. I wouldn't be confident going into the season with him as an option other than, you know, your usual 3 or 4 minutes when we're 3-0 up. The odd Carabao Cup game. I mean, he might well prove me wrong when we get to senior football, but he's gone a long time now as a youth-level footballer without ever really making the step up, whether that's through himself or that it's through lack of opportunities or for loans, whatever it is, it's just not really materialised.
Yeah. Another one that was on the tour and kind of started well but then disappeared in terms of selection, scored against Bayern Munich, I think it was James McAtee. Mm. Obviously, he's had a year away. So what do you make of his position at City at the moment?
I'm sensing some doubt from fans here. I've seen a few occasions where people, I know Twitter isn't the world, but...
X isn't the world.
X isn't the world, but... I've seen a few people wondering whether he's, you know, whether he's going to make the grade or not. I mean, his talent isn't in doubt. His potential isn't in doubt. But whether, I don't know whether people think that he hasn't shown in a City shirt yet, but friendlies mean nothing. So the year that he had at Sheffield United was excellent. He had an excellent year at Sheffield United, which the thing that I wanted to pinpoint is that it didn't start that way. I think I came on the podcast last year and I think it was prompted by yourself because we were both worried.
Yeah.
That his loan at Sheffield United wasn't really, is this the place that he should be? Is Paul Higginbottom, is that the manager?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Is he the right manager for you know, is he going to play the right type of football? It wasn't going well. Tommy Doyle, straight into the team, straight away. But he took his time. But he did take, you know, he adapted, he played really well. He started to impose the way he plays on, you know, and merge that with the physicality of the Championship. And he started to really impact games at that level to the point where, you know, Sheffield United were promoted. It went really well in the end. So, I mean, I wouldn't be prepared to write him off, but unlike Oscar Bob, he has at least a full season of senior football where it went really well. You know what I mean? You can see where the difference is here. I would be much more inclined to give James a chance to be a full-time squad member, to get the sort of... Is anyone ever going to get the sort of minutes that Rico ever got again? Possibly not. But, you know, he would be my choice.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe... Do you remember like Foden in the Centurion season? That sort of level of minutes. I don't know.
Yeah. Because even Rico stole a march on the minutes that Foden got by a good year and a half, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be good. I mean, I don't know whether that's enough for James at this point.
Whether he'd want more, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So I'm not sure. He's an excellent player who I've always admired and I've always, you know, we've been talking about him on here for years now, haven't we? I'd like to see him given the chance. Whether it, you know, if it's between the two and the manager keeps a small squad, I would pick James. I've not really got too much to add from pre-season. Everybody knows it was quite a small academy presence. I've seen some disappointment. But what I did want to point out was when they got back, there was some first team training photos and a lad called Isaiah Dada Maskol, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, he popped up in first team training. Now he again, this year is going to be a second year, so the same as Rico was last year. He only played under 18s football last year, so he didn't take the step up at any point. He's a defensive midfielder. And at 17, he's already absolutely massive. He's bigger, he's bigger than Rodri, which is incredible, really, for a 17-year-old.
Height or width, because they're both impressive stats either way.
we'll just go with height for now. I don't know about that, but it's when the picture came out, he's been training with the first team, which I think is, I've already said unprecedented on this podcast, but I think that's quite a thing, because at the time the EDS were playing games, they were playing friendlies, and there was only the usual couple of, you know, sprinkled youth players that are, you know, seen as first teamers. And him. Now, he didn't stand out massively to me last year, but he did stand massively.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I understand about, I think it might have been Sam at The Athletic last year, who was saying that the manager likes to have good players to train against. So it's almost like, you know, it's almost like you're playing against seniors, and someone of his stature, I can understand why he would be a prime candidate for that. You're playing against somebody who is already bigger than anybody there.
Yeah. And well-versed in what City want, sort of thing.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. But that said, somebody who's in his first year last year didn't play any reserve football at all, all under-18 stuff. I think this is a really interesting choice by the manager to bring up. If you think about his position as well, and we think about Rodri's comments recently, like, you know, Jesus, lads, I can't play 70 games a year every year, you know, that sort of thing. And then you think about his backup, who is the out of shape guy who gurns at the cameras from the bench. Like, he, his position is already under threat. If there is somebody like Dada Maskol who has anything about him and who can take that place and can actually, for this year, please God, give Rodri a rest at some point, I think that's quite an interesting appearance in the first team picture. It's one to keep an eye on, rather than I'm saying, you know, he's going to start backing up Rodri. But
yeah,
like I say, that's an interesting development for me, for sure.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Sean Blinkhorn talking us through the EDS players to watch this season. We're going to finish by squeezing in a few audience questions. Get them in for next week at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter. You can email us through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. Just fill in the form there, send an email over. Alan has been in touch on Twitter to say, do you think the continued focus on City's finances from UEFA and the Premier League are leading City to be more careful with their spending? Given the money that the academy is making through player sales, the increased revenues from things like this season's pre-season tour, and the prize money from last season, City could surely have afforded to outbid Arsenal for Declan Rice, for instance. Maka, what do you make of that?
Did we really want Declan Rice?
Well, I mean, not specifically Declan Rice, but it does feel like at times like City are going, no, like, you want 5 million more? No, we're not paying that.
Yeah, but we've been like that for a number of years, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been told like that for a number of years and just say, yeah, no. And I think we've been very clever in many ways and just... But going back to that, it is relevant. Did we want Declan Rice? Mm. Adam, do you reckon?
Well, I just think, like, in general, like, the whole sentiment, it annoys me with, like, general, some fans on Twitter that are usually under the age of 16 who think that Cheeky has this war chest and he should just shamelessly throw it about, like, you know, things that...
shamelessly thrown around.
Yeah, like a billion Freddos or something. That's what we're to buy. But, like, you know, but the thing is, City have always named the price, and that is the price. And that's a good way to operate, I think. It means that you don't get, because United, this is the thing, United have risen to bidding wars in the past, and now teams view them in a lesser manner when they're negotiating with them. So now United, after the last decade of spending, have found themselves in a predicament where they could go for anyone and they'll slap 20 million on top because, you know, it's United, and the way that they've operated, they'll pay it. So you set a precedent by lowballing, and then that's the way that you get your targets. And look, the players we've missed out on in the past, I think Rice will be a success at Arsenal, but particularly to Chelsea and United, these teams, we've not really missed out much, you know. And the thing is, we're such a good project that players usually 9 times out of 10 want to come to us anyway. So it's difficult for the club to demand more when the player wants to join us in the first place. Yeah. So it's a bit of a, you know, this is the way that we've operated. I think it's got nothing to do with UEFA, the Premier League. I think I'd like to think, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think that the club are well in check with how they deal with the finances. They think it's all above board and they're just going to continue operating as normal. And, yeah, that's how it'll continue
it's
to be.
It's an interesting one, though. But in terms of Rice, though, where would he have played?
I think in the Stones role, like, where he can drift into the pivot in midfield. That's the only way that I could see it working well.
Yeah, but Stones does that.
He does, but maybe he
doesn't. Swish! Yeah. Nothing gets past Maka.
No, what I mean is, was it not just a bit of a ruse? Was it not?
I think we did want him. He is. I really, really rate him, and I think that he would have fit in like a glove. And then maybe you would have put Stones in where Akanji was, and then sort of shifted it that way. But it's not. It's just one of those where it's like, he's a quality player, but it's not the end of the world that we've missed out on him, and it's not worth getting upset that we didn't bid an extra 5 million, which was already on a preposterous amount of money for him anyway. So, yeah, not the end of the world. I've not lost any sleep over losing Rice.
Let's finish with this from Paul on the emails, who says, I was wondering whether you are starting to get a little worried about players like Tommy Doyle and Taylor Harwood-Bellis. It seems obvious that they would leave permanently this summer, but there's been no news on them and they haven't featured in pre-season or the early season games. Adam, I guess this is an interesting one, because you look at those two in particular. We talked earlier on about McAtee and about Palmer, who are on the fringes to varying degrees of the first team, whereas these two just not in the picture at all right now. If they don't move on, kind of what happens?
Well, I'm not worried about them. They've got comfortable lives, but, like, I think they'll be, you know, they'll, yeah, I suppose in terms of the careers, Tommy Doyle, it's a weird one, because obviously he's related to Glenn Pardo, and he sort of got a very deep-rooted connection with the club, so maybe the club have wanted him to succeed in that regard. But I know some Sheffield United fans. I didn't really watch them much last year, but they waxed lyrical about how good he was in that team. So City, I think based off those performances alone and how much he played for Sheffield United, and I think Harwood Bellis was at Burnley, right? He obviously played a big part in their promotion. There'll be suitors for them. I don't think it's going to be a case of City being unable to find a suitor. I think, when did Wilson Esperon go on loan as well last season? Was that like mid-season or something?
Yeah, I'm sure it was like January after the window maybe.
Yeah, I think it was. So like, it might not be as time-barred as people think for them. I don't think they're going to make it at City, but I think they're going to, those two in particular will be fine. Like they'll go on and have stellar careers, I've no doubt, just perhaps not at the club. So, you know, I'm content with the fact they're not going to make it at the club, but I'm also pretty confident that the club will treat them right and get them the right moves with it, you know, yeah, in due time.
Macca, there's another side to this as well. When you look at the players that have left City recently from the academy that have maybe had one or two first team appearances, or maybe none at all in the case of players like Romeo Lavia, it really speaks to how well City Academy is doing, not just on... Like, it sounds awful to talk about players in this way, but in generating income for the club anyway. But also, like, in actually getting careers for these young players elsewhere in the football pyramid.
Yeah, no, it's right. And there's a lot of people who won't like to hear this, but one of the things that Alex Ferguson used to say when he sat down the families for young lads, and he'd say, but I'm not guaranteeing that your son is going to have a career at Manchester United, but he's going to have a career somewhere, and that's all you ask. And I think that's what we're doing at the moment. And also, I mean, it sounds awful, we're making a hell of a lot of money out of him as well.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to a close for today's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you to my guests for this one. Macca.
Thank you, David.
And Adam Monk.
Pleasure.
I will be back next week, so I will see you then.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
It was our first real foray into Europe. And that was really a game that had everything. We had sending offs, both teams scored. Alano hit the bar about 16 times.
Alano had a shot direct from a corner on three separate occasions in that game.
It was desperate for us to win it, wasn't he? So, it just had everything, and the atmosphere was bouncing at that point. That was the best atmosphere at the Etihad that we'd had up to that point.
That's a game obviously I wish I'd been at the QPR, but that's a game I always kind of wish I was around for, and wish I was a bit more attached in terms of being here and knocking about with you lad and stuff. Like, I kind of watched that on my own in the pub back in Ireland, and the bouncer said, "Oh, here's the Man City supporters club in," and it was just me sat there. but I've always been properly jealous of hearing the conversation about that, because to go down in the annals that way, you know, it's just... And for it to be talked about so, so highly by anybody who was there, I just like, and surely it suggests something about cheaper ticket prices, more people in, the place is bouncing, you know, and people who don't always get to see the game, getting to see it, it's gonna lead to an increased atmosphere.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.